All right, welcome to End Another Thing. So we're going to talk about sex and virginity and kids and stuff.
Oh, yay. My favorite combo.
Well, you know, I'm a big fan of talking about that because I have a book out called The Virgin Diary. So any opportunity to shamelessly plug my Amazon book, The Virgin Diaries, I'm going to take it.
Go for it. I'm right there with
you. So do you want to start? Do you want to share about your virginity story, or are you uncomfortable? I'll share mine.
I'm not uncomfortable about anything. So I can tell you mine. You want to hear mine?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. So, yes, let's go back to the, hold on. Let's go back to 1982. And it's one of the last days of school, my sophomore year.
So you were 16?
Not yet. Okay. I'm a November baby. So I was, you know, 15 and a half, little more than that. I had a boyfriend who I was just head over heels for. He was a year older than me. And, I was concerned. My mom's generation is early 60s, you know, late 50s, early 60s is when she was growing up. And I was very concerned about reputation. Remember that word?
Yeah.
With regards to how we should behave and as nice girls. And so I was really concerned, and I hadn't really done too much in you know, fooling around with boys. And I didn't know, I knew it was coming, but I just was kind of afraid of it. Mm-hmm. And, it was the last day of school, and he said, let's go down this path. And I was like, oh my God, all I could think of was yes. But in my mind, I could hear my mom going, your reputation. So we jumped up on top of his twin sized waterbed and did it.
Did it
without any protection.
Oh my God.
Okay. Zero. And so all I could think about for, you know, the next however many days it was until I got my period was that I was A, pregnant, and everybody was going to know.
Yeah.
Well, nobody knew.
Of course.
And I wasn't pregnant.
Thank God.
And yeah, thank God that time. And, but what was really interesting about, and then of course we were like, it was at every turn and it was summer. So we had ample opportunity to just get busy all the time.
Yeah.
And I mean, all the time. Like if five times in a day was not, it was not odd.
Wow.
For us. Oh yeah. It was crazy town. And,
you're such a slut.
you know what? Yes. But what was really interesting was right after, like literally days after the first time, my mom looked at me one morning and she goes, "Are you sleeping with him?" And I mean, it was more of a question. It wasn't like, "You bad girl." She goes, "Are you sleeping with him?"
Uh-huh.
And I said, "Oh my God, how can you tell?" And she goes, "I'm your mother, man. I can tell." And she marched me straight into the gynecologist's office and got me on the pill.
Hmm.
Yep. And so then from, you know.
When you had sex for the first time, did it hurt?
No.
Really?
No, I don't know why.
Maybe just because you're a slut.
Because I'm a slut, or maybe because I was digging it. I don't know. I mean, I do remember I wasn't the greatest participant in the act at that, because I was just kind of laying there. I'm sure my eyes were as wide as saucers, and I was like, oh my God, slosh, slosh, slosh on the waterbed. But yeah, I just remember it being something that I was just sort of almost looking down on and not really participating in, you know, like it was sort of out of body for me.
Yeah.
And then I, you know, then the slut in me learned to love it very quickly.
Wow. That's, mine is different in that.
Talk to me.
Well, I was going out with this guy who, identified as a death rocker at the time, which now you would call him goth. He was slightly overweight. And he was like a Mexican American. He, you know, he had darker skin. He was not an attractive young man. In fact, the girls in my school, I was going to a school basically in a beach town, and he lived about 45 minutes away from me inland. And so I was like beach girl, and they used to call us Beauty and the Beast. And he just looked, I'll give you, when my mother met him, he wanted to make this impression on her, and I know he wanted to shock her. You know, my mother is not so easily shocked. She's seen a lot of shit. And anyway, he came to pick me up the first time she ever met him, and he was wearing this kind of, oh, I always liken it to, I don't know if you remember the show Alice, but there was like, there was that telephone repairman dude who was always wearing that, like those blue, not overalls, but the, you know, like it had long sleeves and it was a one piece jumpsuit.
It was a jumper.
It was like,
yeah.
A work jumpsuit. So this guy that I was with was wearing a dark blue ill-fitting, he's about 15 pounds overweight, ill-fitting work jumpsuit. And it had white paint splash marks all over it, and then like down the arm it said damned, and I don't know, some other satanic looking lettering on his back. And then he was wearing a collar that connected his wrist to his neck, and you know, so he stands there with his fucking crazy hair, and he had like this white slash thing in the front of his hair. And my mother opens the door and she looks at him and she's like, nice outfit. And then that was it. And I know he was probably expecting her to be just appalled, but she didn't give a shit. And she said to me, she's like, what the fuck were you thinking? But you know, totally. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And he was very charming in that he was smart and he was very, he knew how to express himself well. He was a good writer. He was an artist. So anyway, I had mentioned that, you know, he lived about 45 minutes away. So he went to school with my best girlfriend in Lakewood, California, and I lived in Torrance, California, and he had a car and I didn't, and he had a girlfriend. So I met him when he was dating this other girl, and I decided that I really liked him. And, you know, I don't know how it came out that, you know, he knew, he found out. So he called me and we went out, and then he told me he broke up with his girlfriend. And then my girlfriend would always come back and say, no, they're really not broken up. And it was just drama, you know, stupid teenage drama.
Yeah, totally.
So stupidly, I thought, you know, I mean, we had messed around, and everything that I did, because I was pretty new to all of this and I was such a little prude when I was growing up. So anything that he did to me, I thought was dirty. And I remember, you know, he put his finger inside of me, and I just thought that was the dirtiest thing that could ever happen. And I told my other girlfriend about it, and she's like, that's nothing. And as soon as she like told me that it was nothing, I was like, oh, I guess it's nothing. So it was just like the natural thing. You know, we pretty much did everything else. We hadn't engaged in oral sex or anything like that, but we had touched each other everywhere else and did everything else. And so I decided that, you know what, if I had sex with him, of course, he was just going to realize that I was better than his stupid girlfriend, and he would leave her, and it would just be happily ever after for me and the Death Rocker. So first we tried, and it didn't happen. We gave it the really good, solid try, and it wouldn't go in. It just would not go in. I guess my vagina just was like, no! Because like you, I was afraid. I was like nervous about it. And I wasn't worried about a reputation, but I was, I just was afraid. So later on, we decided, okay, we're going to try it again. And it was right after Christmas, and I was 16. I was about 16 and a half. So I had all this money from like $500 from Christmas money. And it was me and this guy, and then my best girlfriend, two other punk guys, and a punk girl. And we all went to the Lomita. It was the Lomita Motel Room 1. It was like this fucking horrible.
Oh, wow.
It was like this horrible, disgusting, motel. Yeah, just cave. And so there was a room off to the side that I don't even know what kind of room it was, but it was very small. It was like the size of a closet. So my boyfriend and I had closed off the room. And so we put off like the dresser, and there was no door. So we put a dresser in front of the door, and then we put the mini refrigerator on top of the dresser. And you know, we had all been drinking just like to have some privacy. So we had all been drinking, and so we go into the little closet room and seal ourselves off as best we can while all the other punk rockers were doing whatever, God knows what they were doing out in the other room, getting drunk and being belligerent and ruining the room. So we have sex, and I just remember, like, I just describe it as I did in the book Peyton's Choice, ripping fucking pain. I mean, you know, he ripped my hymen, and it felt like skin ripped, and it was excruciating. And yeah, it was awful. And he was just kind of a big lump on me, and I can't really remember much else because I had been drinking, and I remember the pain. And then I remember after it was all over. Oh, and then I don't remember when this happened because we slept there after we had sex. But at some point, the mini refrigerator fell on his face.
Oh my God.
It was like crazy. But anyway, so after we finished doing it, you know, he wore a condom. He took it off and I guess just like threw it somewhere on the floor. And then, you know, we come out of our little room and the guys go get more alcohol. And the girls, it was me and my best girlfriend and her friend. My best girlfriend was so drunk at the time, and she's like, I want to see the condom. So I'm trying to like pull her back. I don't want her to see it. She finds it, and it's disgusting because it's bloody.
Of course. Ew.
It's so gross. And, you know, and then basically I remember that we all fell asleep. And I woke up the next morning to this destroyed, damaged motel room. The TV had been pulled off the wall. There was barf on the bed. I mean, it was just disgusting. And
so you went in style.
Yeah, it was a classy story. And the funny thing was, after it was said and done, my mother, who was a single mother, I was supposed to be spending the night at my friend's house in Lakewood, but we had driven down to get my Christmas money. And so that's why Lomita isn't far from Torrance. So it was like 8 o'clock in the morning and it was Sunday morning and my mother was getting ready for work. So I show up with this gang of, you know, punk rocker, death rocker types at like 8:30 in the morning. And my mom, who's just busy getting ready for work, sees us and is surprised that we've shown up. And she's like, what are you doing here? And I told her, I can't believe she fell for this. I told her that we were going to go to church, but it was closed.
On
Sunday morning.
God.
And she's like, oh, whatever, have a nice day. And she leaves. And like later I brought that up to her. I'm like, Mom, how could you just like accept that? She's like, oh, well, you know how I am when I'm getting ready for work. But anyway, so I thought, okay, whatever.
Oh my God.
So I told her about it about a month later and she wasn't surprised, but you know, she had the talk with me and she made it very clear that, once I decided to become sexually active, she was going to take me to get birth control. And I don't remember exactly when it happened, but I did go on birth control. And, you know, as I mentioned, I always practice safe sex, so I never had to really worry about that. But it was certainly not, you know, and even though it wasn't enjoyable, and I think I had sex with him a total of about 8 times in the several months we lasted, because we broke up and then we got back together months later. So, you know, and
was it ever enjoyable with him?
No, never. Not once. He was horrible. And and I never even got to see what he looked like without any clothes on, because we always did it in the dark. I think he was kind of embarrassed about his body or something. Uh-huh. And I do remember feeling, though, as if I had accomplished what I wanted to accomplish. Like, I kind of had my first notch. Not that I was looking to rack up the notches, but I kind of just felt like, ha-ha, I did it. And I had absolutely no regret. I believe that I was mentally prepared and ready. I didn't look back and think, oh, my God, what did I just do? It was something that I felt like, I'm glad I got it out of the way now. And then what you said, you know, you were laying there doing nothing. The next person that I had sex with became my next boyfriend. He told me, he's kind of how I learned to get my groove on. And he told me that the first time he had sex with me, I was a dead lay. I just laid there. But because, you know, the first guy... And I didn't really have...
Thanks, honey.
I know. But he was right. Because I just did. I just laid there. I didn't understand,
right?
You know, about having fun. It was kind of more of the novelty of like, oh my God, I'm having sex. And so that's all I needed to worry about. But then the next time I, you know, got into a sexual relationship, that's when I learned to have fun with it.
You rode him like a rented mule.
But what's funny is the first guy, the punk rocker dude, you know, we had broken up and it was always so tumultuous and dramatic and ridiculous. But my favorite thing is that we got into this big fight. He was still with this other girl that I found out. That's finally why I broke up with him. And we were, you know, arguing back and forth and we had this, you know, terrible fight. And he sent me a letter a 5-page letter just saying, and he was so smart and he had such a way with words. And I included this in my book, Peyton's Choice, but he called me like a cruel fork tongue bitch. And
oh my.
And I mean, he was great with the words, and it was really funny because it was 5 pages of just like letting me have it. And then he included a drawing, which he was a good artist, of me naked with my legs spread apart and skulls coming out of my crotch.
Oh, do you have it still?
Actually, that happens all the time. I can get an iPhone picture right now.
Text it to me, Bob.
No, I don't. I wish I had the picture. I swear to God, I put it on Facebook, but I don't have it. I lost it somehow, but I took that letter and I took that picture to school and I like read it to everybody and showed it off because I just thought it was the funniest thing ever.
So
there's my little virginity story.
It's funny, like you and I, it's we get along so well, and I think we're very similar in a lot of ways. But like, you just don't give a shit. Like you just said what you said, and that's great. And we're honest about those experiences. But like, you took the picture to school. I would have crawled into a cave. I would have had to have been homeschooled. Honestly, like seriously, what is wrong with me? I'm such a late bloomer with like my, you know, stand up for what's right and, you know, don't be afraid. I would have crawled into a hole.
Well, you know, I mean, we came from different, I believe we had very different upbringings. Some, you know, my mother was a single mother and it was right in the middle of the sexual revolution when my mother and father split. I was 3 years old and it was sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and it was hippies and the Vietnam War. And, you know, I mean, my mother grew up in an Ozzy and Harriet type environment with her parents, and she was such a shy, unlike now, she was shy and unassuming. She was always very smart and well-spoken and well-read, but she didn't stand up for herself either. But, you know, she became a woman really during the second wave
and
found her voice. And I was 3 years old when my parents split up, and, you know, my mother went out with men and had sex with men. My father obviously did the same. He went out and had sex with women. And I saw all of that. I mean, it wasn't like I was watching them have sex, but I was aware of what they were doing. I was aware my mother dated. I was aware that my mother was pulling home or pulling the money in and taking care of me. And, you know, my father helped, but she was the one doing the heavy lifting. And, you know, she was the one who took care of me when I was sick, but she was also the one bringing home the bacon and frying it up in the pan and going out and defending herself. Like, there was one time, I believe there was a gathering of people who were fighting for, I guess in Maryland at the time, they were looking to cut the assistance that young parents or single parents got. And she needed that assistance in order to make it work. So, you know, with a shaky hand, she grabbed the microphone and got up in front of people, and she would come home and tell me about things like that.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, I mean, I got a different upbringing, and I have a different perspective. And my mom was also like a, you know, when I was 8 years old, she went to work for a rock and roll radio station in Baltimore, Maryland. And I used to go hang out with her on occasion with the people who worked at that rock and roll radio station, or I would actually just go to the station. So, you know, these people were smoking pot all over the place and running around and just behaving as they did in that time.
Yeah.
So I kind of, that's why I think when I saw that picture of me, I just laughed. I thought it was funny.
No, see, and that is the difference, because I had fear and shame around it. You know what I mean? Which is really funny, because my parents, and that evolved over time, because once I got past it and once, you know, my mom realized what was going on, we had a really open relationship and conversations about sex, and it was really, really healthy. But before I actually, you know, crossed into that sexually active world, I had so much shame. And, you know, I grew up Catholic, and that was just sort of ingrained in me.
Yeah.
And it changed over time. But believe me, my mom and dad were children of the 50s and 60s. And when my dad was going to graduate school at Stanford in the mid 70s, 74 and 75, I saw some shit.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I mean, I walked in, my parents were, you know, long haired, doing the best they could to be hippies and living that life. But I remember being at a slumber party one time, fourth grade, and we were running around the house with our shirts off and playing hide and seek, you know, just weird little exploratory sort of behaviors at that age, you know, when you're 10 or 11 or however old you are in fourth. And the single mom had her boyfriend come over right after we were finishing dinner. And it was weird. And they were like kind of touchy-feely in the kitchen and we were spying on them and they were touching each other's faces, like all, you know, weird new agey shit. and then the hide and seek started and the mother and the boyfriend had disappeared. Well, I was it. So I'm looking for the girls as they're hiding through the house and I fling open a door that, lo and behold, was the mother's bedroom door. And I saw for the first time a man and a woman in the 69 position.
Oh my God.
And I open the door and they're naked and the light from the hallway is shining in on their white pasty bodies. And two heads from either ends of the ass pop up and look at me like, huh?
Oh,
and I go, I just stood there. Like I stood there for seconds, like a couple of beats. And then I shut the door. And I went out and I was like, oh my God, I didn't say a thing to anybody. And it didn't occur to me until years later what that was. I'm like, I'm doing 69. Heidi's mom showed me a thing or two back in 75. I know what I'm doing. But it was weird because I didn't know what any of that stuff was until I was like in it, you know?
Yeah.
Anyhow. And then I remember asking my mom, I'm like, Mom, what's an orgasm feel like? Because I had them, but I didn't know that's what they were.
The name.
You know, I was like, I think I was probably a freshman, or it was probably right before sophomore in high school. And I remember we were sitting there together and she goes, she described it. And she's like, it's like your whole body comes alive. And it's almost like every blood vessel in your body at the same time just sort of explodes.
Wow.
And I go, all right. And then, sign me up.
You know, it's funny because as much as I, boasted about this skulls coming out of my crotch artwork, there is a prudish side to me, or at least there was, and I never would have asked my mother. I read the book forever when I was 10 and Judy Blume kept saying, come, you know, did you come? Did you come? And I had a vague understanding of what that meant, but I knew I couldn't ask my mother. Because it was just too humiliating and embarrassing for me. So, you know, it's funny. There's times where I was really prudish. The older that I got, the less prudish I was. But prude is a really correct term, too, because I was just horrified. I mean, I was horrified by anything having to do with becoming a woman, getting my period, breasts growing. Once I got it and once I, you know, started becoming interested in boys, that prudishness fell away. For the most part. I mean, I certainly wasn't this young girl who was running around, you know, trying to kiss. I was still afraid and nervous. But once I felt comfortable, like I was the kind of person as a young person who once I decided I'm ready, I was ready. I knew I was ready. There was a cutoff. Like it was like there was a point, though, where I was like, okay, I'm not ready. I'm just not ready. You know, when I was 15 years old, I was not ready to have sex. And in fact, there was a boy that I liked when I was 14 and he had already engaged in sex and all of this. And I think he had sex with a girlfriend of mine and I had a huge crush on him. And she told me, she said, you know, you have to be prepared that, you know, you like him and you're putting it out there that you like him, but he's had sex. So he's going to expect sex. And I remember she told me that and I thought, oh my God, she's right. And I wasn't ready to have sex. The first French kiss I had when I was like around 15. And so, I mean, within a year and a half that, or maybe a year's time, that's when I had sex, but I was just not ready. So, you know, I mean, I think when you're a kid, it's hard to determine when you're really ready, but I kind of knew. And, you know, and that's kind of why I wanted to collect the stories for the Virgin Diaries. And when I would speak, and this is what I want to ask you about as a parent, but when I would talk to parents as I was collecting the stories, especially men, I would say, you know, what age do you think is a good age for a young person to read this book? And I mean, almost everybody would say 18. And it's like, well, do you realize like so many people lose their virginity, especially girls at around 15 or 16? Yeah. So if you're going to catch them at 18, it's too late.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And those conversations. So I, you know, I've got a son who's going to be 13 in July, and
July
not,
what?
July 24th.
Oh, okay. I'm July 17th.
Oh, my wedding anniversary is the 13th.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. And I'm not all super astrological, but, Cancers and Scorpios are a really good combination, and I'm a Scorpio.
Well, they're both water signs.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that.
And we're passionate, and well, I'll go ahead and say it about myself, quite vindictive. Yeah. No, and you know what? That's not right. Grudge holdy. That's what we are. But anyway, so back to the sun, who's a Leo, by the way. He is 13. He is deep in puberty. It's going to happen. Like, he's going into the eighth grade in September. Like, it's right there. He's on the precipice. Yeah. And we've had all the talks with him, and we had him years ago. When he was about 8 and a half, he asked me what, you know, sexual intercourse was. I told him everything. Mm-hmm. And my husband and I have had those conversations with him, subsequent conversations with him about like what's happening to him now. Mm-hmm. And, I did think it was probably more appropriate for my husband to talk about wet dreams with him since he has a penis.
Yeah.
And I don't. And so he was like, no, don't make me do it. And I go, honey, that's what you have to do. You're the dad. You do that with him. So they were driving together and alone. And after this long drive home from, we were down at Half Moon Bay and we came back home to Oakland. He was with my husband, and my son comes up to me and he's like, Mom, Dad had the nocturnal emissions talk with me.
Nocturnal emissions.
Nocturnal emissions. And all I said to him was, hey, look, dude, it's going to happen. And if it does happen, no words have to happen between us. You leave your bedroom door open. You put those filthy sheets behind the door, and when you come home from school, that shit will be clean and nobody's going to say a thing. And then after that, I dropped a little box of Kleenex onto his bedstand, his nightstand. I feel I'm whispering. Why am I whispering? I dropped a box of Kleenex on his nightstand, and you know what? What he does is his business. But I want him, you know, the conversations that we have now are, he wants to watch R-rated movies. And sometimes if the sexual content is too heavy, I'm like, kind of questionable and he says, why? It's just body parts. It's just, you know, it's sexy. He goes, Mom, I'm going to have it one day. And I said, I know, but that's not what real sex is like. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sorry, but the Wolf of Wall Street, okay, that's not what I want you to have in your mind about how real sex is between people who hopefully care about each other enough to want to do it. And so, you know, we talk about if you're with a girl or a woman and she's resisting or she's saying that she's not into it, you back away. Mm-hmm. That's it. No questions asked. And he goes, I know, I understand that, Mom. And then I said, but if you like each other, you're safe about it and you communicate through it. And, you know, we're trying to be open with him, and I don't want him to have shame around it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like I did initially, because it's fucking fun.
I think it's really awesome that you basically taught him about consent.
Yeah. Of course.
And you did it in such a way that you didn't like bring in rape culture and make it this big deal, that it was just something, a very nice, smooth transition. And as long as she's saying yes to you, you're good to go.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's really
exactly
important.
That's the only way to fly. No matter what your age, that is the only way. And no matter if you're married, you know, I've heard stories about, you know, married couples where the woman has absolutely no desire and the husband guilts her into it. Like, what kind of a relationship is that?
Yeah.
Don't you know? I'd rather just say, hey, look, I don't feel like it tonight. I still think you're sexy. Let's go for it, you know, tomorrow or whatever it happens to be. Like, you know, we've talked about this before. My husband is a beast, and he, like, if he could have it every single night, then that's what we would be doing. But he also respects me.
Yeah.
And if it's not something that I want, we have a nice little conversation about it. And I maybe even have said to him, I still think you're super sexy. And then you better believe it's going down the next time in more ways than one. But I'm just saying, like, it's gotta be like that in a marriage. It's gotta be like that in a committed relationship. It's gotta be like that for your first time or your fifth time or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm on board with you. I mean, I totally agree. And it's, I think that, but again, I mean, I'm just happy to hear, because, you know, coming from a perspective of a young girl, my experience in learning about sex never really focused on consent. It was all just about what I needed to worry about as far as birth control or whatever. But, you know, I know that boys, you know, we talk about it online all the time, and how parents have to, I mean, because it's not about, like, you don't just say to your son, don't rape a girl. You know, I mean, it's so much more delicate, and you know, I think it's really important to find little ways to not make them feel defensive, but to make them understand what is acceptable and appropriate and what isn't. Because obviously there are girls out there, who young girls, who are confused sexually. They are not really sure what they want. So they could be sending out signals. They want something more than they do. And then when things really get hot and heavy, they say no. And, you know, and it's not to say they're a tease. It's just that they are like, oh my God,
I changed my mind. Yeah. This doesn't feel right. And that's completely fine.
Yeah. And it's a really good thing to teach boys. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. We could talk about this forever. So fortunately we'll have another show to talk about things, but I think we should wrap it up for now. Our first official show as co-hosts.
Woohoo! Yay. Let's do it again.
Yes.
With consent.
We're going to be back on 426. So, for all you out there who are looking forward to the next show, it'll be April 26th. And until then, thanks, Stephanie. Steph.
Thank you, Kimberly.
And we'll see
you guys. Love being with you.
Me too. See you guys later.
All right. Take care.